When you're healing from trauma, removing emotion from the equation is going to allow for that healing to begin.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard.
Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I am super excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education and life space in this case. And today we're going to be talking about optimism as a positive disruptor and how we think about the concept of what we learn and what we experience in life and why do all of those things matter. And joining us today is Jenna Edwards, who is author of the upcoming book, Aggressive Optimism. So Jenna, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Hi. Oh my gosh. Thanks for having me. I love the term disruptor, by the way. When I saw that, I was like, yes.
Excellent. Well, I think that, you know, some common synergies there.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful. Well, let's set just a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. Aggressive optimism is a story that explores the complex landscape of mental health and the importance of solidarity and the power of perseverance, which I also love. And let's be really clear, this is a novel that has been inspired by true events written for high school students and is a unique yet relatable coming of age story that fuses the emotional resonance of a sort of girl interrupted with the empowering essence of Legally Blonde, which also I love. And it'll be out in March of 2024. We'll talk about that here at the end. But Jenna, let's start with sort of the why. Why this book and why now?
Oh gosh. Well, why this book is because it's based on my real story of overcoming post-traumatic stress disorder and having to really dive deep and find those tools of resilience and figure out my own way of overcoming trauma and getting back to the life that I wanted to live. And in that journey, discovering there's a million ways to do anything. And the more we explore with optimism, the ways that we individually can heal through certain things, the more I was like, I really need to share this story because there's a lot of like, I call it spoonful of medicine kind of writing where it's like a tip for how to like stop a panic attack written into a story that people can relate to. And before COVID, I actually started speaking to high school students and I love them. Like, I truly was like, this is my jam. I need to be around this energy. They're so hungry for like figuring out who they are, how they operate. They're actively learning. And it's such a refreshing place to be. Like, I work, my day job is in corporate America, so it's not as like I said, hungry and people are kind of set in their ways sometimes, and you know, there's a lot of like roadblocks to doing the thing that you want to do. But when you get around teenagers, you know, those roadblocks tend to be internal. And so I wanted to write a book that it has a lot of internal dialogue in the main character. Her name is Niff. And that internal dialogue, I feel like, allows for these teenagers to understand, A, they're not alone in their thoughts, and B, gives them kind of language around topics that are really hard to discuss sometimes. And so that's the why mm-hmm. of it all.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think just to sort of provide a bit more context. I don't want you to give away the great details because I had a chance to dig in to the advanced copy of the book. And so I want people to go out and just like consume it, right? Because I think that they will really enjoy that. But give us the 100,000 foot view, the sort of the premise, the gist of the story. And because the reason I want to ask the question, that question right now, is because I want to pivot on the back side of that and really sort of dig into sort of the mental health crisis that we're finding that exists, especially in school settings, because this book really tackles that. So give me the just enough so that the listeners understand what we're talking about, but not so much that they don't want to go out and read every word of it.
You know, it's so funny. My way of getting around this is to tell my actual story, because that's what this book is based on, so that there aren't spoilers, because it's, you know, set in a high school. But essentially, the book is about the main character. Her name is Niff. It's short for Jennifer. And she is a small town girl with really big city dreams. Like, her dream is to come to Los Angeles to be a singer, and she thinks her big break is about to happen, and tragedy strikes, and she goes on this journey of understanding how to heal these. Well, she develops post-traumatic stress disorder specifically, but that comes along with so many things: OCD, anxiety, depression, along with the, you know, flashbacks, panic attacks, like not sleeping, all of these things that are just really debilitating. And so she essentially loses her voice, right? She loses the ability to physically sing because the hyperventilating doesn't allow for it. And she loses the ability to say, like, express herself. This is a true, how do I say it, depiction of what it was like for me to have post-traumatic stress disorder, like after I was diagnosed, and it got worse because I was in total denial about it. I couldn't read. I stuttered when I talked. I would forget basic words. I didn't sleep for 8 months, and it totally derailed my life. And so I wanted to, for years, people were like, why don't you write this as a nonfiction? You know, it's such a, like, it's such a story, y'all. But I was like, because of the PTSD, there are situations and events that I don't know if I'm remembering accurately. But what I do remember accurately is the feeling and the emotion and what the struggles were and what the wins were. And so to put it into a novel and then write it specifically for high school was really important to me, because it's not about the event. You know, like, I always say this, when people read it or they hear my story, they're like, well, I had something similar. It wasn't as big as yours, right? Like, my event made national news. It was like this whole thing. And so people always belittle their trauma and their experience when they begin talking to me. And my big thing is, like, if it's affecting your life, it is a big deal. If it is making it so that you are not living to your fullest potential, in my opinion, it is a big deal. And there are ways for you to overcome that thing that's in your way. And so that's why I wanted to write it as a novel, specifically for high schoolers. She, Niff, going back to the story, eventually, like, goes through her journey of healing. And it has a really great Legally Blonde type ending. So I don't want to give it away, but I really, really hope that everybody listening will dive into it and read it and share it with whatever teenagers are in their life. Because I truly believe there's so many nuggets that they can relate to, but also tools that they can put in their toolbox for whatever they're experiencing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. I think that, kiddos will get a lot out of it because it'll be very relatable to them. Let's pivot just a little bit and think about, okay, so you've written this fabulous book. And kids will benefit from it. But how do you get educators and schools on board with this, right? So how do you take a great story, right, that you actually wrote to create processes and opportunity for healing and resolution, right, amongst a population that we know mental health and the mental health crisis, not just in the US, but other parts of the world, especially in a post-pandemic space. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. It's very real. It's yes. everywhere. And it's in K-12, it's in post-secondary, it's in the world of work, it's in our personal lives. It's hard to bump up against somebody that doesn't have a story to tell, right? About somebody I know or experience that I had.
Yeah.
So how do you take a book like Aggressive Optimism and the power that it has and ensure that it becomes an appropriate tool in an educational setting? And so I know you have a plan for that. So I wanted yes. to talk about that a little bit, because the majority of our listeners are educators in one form or another, right?
Amazing.
And so how do we help them grab Aggressive Optimism and actually use it beyond just the great story that it has to tell?
I love that. Thank you. First of all, I need everybody's help, right? Like, I can't do it by myself. I'm literally one person. I self-published. I worked with a team of amazing, you know, professionals, but it's essentially me and my little computer and doing videos and all of this stuff. I'm lucky enough right now to be able to work with a guidance counselor, a high school guidance counselor / English teacher, who is putting together a curriculum so that the book is an easier sell, if you will, to school boards, because I know that that's a huge bump, like a huge block that I think a lot of educators are facing right now, is like books being banned and the school boards, you know, having their really specific idea of what should be in the classroom. And so I would just say I am working as much as I can to make it as easy as possible to get the book into the classroom. I just would ask anybody who's listening, if you're interested, I am open to conversation, ideas. I mean, I just need, you know, the educator's help on figuring that out. Like, that's what Aggressive Optimism is all about. It's basically acknowledging where you're at, not ignoring the like roadblocks in front of you, and believing there's a way to figure it out. You know, my background is independent film production. Like, I was a producer in indie film. And the first film I ever produced was written and directed by a survivor of Columbine. And we needed to film this. Like, we basically had to go to a school board and be like, we want to shoot up your school. Like, how do you sell that to a school board? And so I'm kind of approaching this book in a similar way, is like, if you need me to come talk to your school board, I am there. If you need me to, you know, write up a different kind of curriculum, I am there. Like, however I can help get this into the hands of teenagers, I'm so passionate about it, because I truly wish it existed when I was going through what I went through. And that is like the driving force behind what I'm doing. And we did, we had to go back to that one school board 3 different times. And, you know, we did it, and we got to make the movie, and it helped a lot of people. And so I feel like, you know, the challenge, the traditional challenge, is getting the book written. But when you write a book that has such a important, in my opinion anyway, like important cause underneath it, like the bigger challenge is getting it into the hands of the people who need it and who will. Honestly, I feel like it's an enjoyable read. As tragic as it is, it's still like a pretty easy read. So it's not like we're, you know, trying to sell a depressing trope of tragedy. It's very inspiring. But anyway, so that's what I would say to that. I definitely have my own plans, but I am open to anyone's ideas. So please reach out.
Yeah. And I love that. Thank you for that very much, because I think that it's wonderful to be able to be open and willing to involve the educators that you're hoping will adopt it in your process of what makes sense for them. So I encourage the listeners, if this is something that you're passionate about, interested in, reach out to Jenna. We will make sure that you have the ability to do that in the show notes when we air the episode, so that, you know, you can engage with Jenna and this process. But with that in mind, let's talk a little bit about the idea of aggressive optimism. So the concept or the mindset, right? Because in my mind, honestly, the place for this book in many, many school settings is going to be in advisory, right? We know that advisory and mentorship makes such a difference for students, especially high school students. By the time you get to that point, we really need these adult and student relationships, and they need to be able to develop over time. They need to have street cred, right? This would be a perfect vehicle, honestly, to incorporate into that. And so, you know, and the other thing is that, you know, advisory serves many purposes, but one of them is around really thinking about mindset and sort of the individual journey. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about the concept of aggressive optimism as a topic. What is this thing?
Aggressive optimism is essentially what I said earlier, which is like acknowledging where you're at, not ignoring any of the situations, like basically removing the emotion from the situation and being like, okay, we need to get the book into the school board. The school board is saying X, Y, Z. We take X, Y, and Z. We write it down. We're like, okay, how can we overcome that? How can we get around it? How can we get through it? How can we get under it? Like whatever the ideas are, that's the optimistic part. Like you have to be so aggressive in your optimism that failure will not happen. The outcome may look different than what you set out to achieve, but it will never be a fail, right? It's basically resilience. It's another way to say resilience. And for me, specifically when it comes to mental health, and I write about this very much in the book, like aggressive optimism is the thread through which NIF tries like 50 different ways to heal. And through my own journey, I realized like I'm just an eternal optimist. And because of that, like any roadblock I came up against, I was lucky enough to have people around me who are like, well, then try this. And then the optimism was like, okay, like I'll try it. Instead of being like, well, I'm going to give up because I've already tried therapy. Y'all, my first therapist literally fell asleep on me. And I write about it in the book. Like the story in the book of the therapist falling asleep is the actual story in my life. I'm not going to give too much away, but I say this to say, if I hadn't been aggressively optimistic about healing, I would have given up. And I probably would be on the street, if not dead, if I had, because I felt like such a burden on the people around me, on, you know, like life in general, like, why am I here? And so it's that, like, it's not just resilience, but it's like proactive resilience. Mm-hmm. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I'm sorry, I could talk about it all day long. I'm like soapbox Jenna about aggressive optimism, but you get it. And I will let you talk.
Well, and I think that that's really interesting, right? Because, you know, resilience, we know there's great data out there that if we can help young people develop a sense of resilience, mm-hmm. and which ultimately will in fact lead to optimism, right?
Absolutely.
But that resilience will carry them so far for so many things that life tosses at all
everything.
Of us, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, totally.
But it's a really difficult concept mm-hmm. to teach, to instruct, right? Which is one of the things that I love about your book, is because it gives the reader mm-hmm. a tangible thing to hold on to go on the journey with, right? To make it about somebody else. Exactly. Right. You know, because that's critically important, right? I agree. Because especially with adolescents, right? Adolescence is tough. We know that, for example, that middle school is the second most active growing time. Our brain develops so much.
Yeah.
And honestly, by the time we hit high school, we're often still in that phase, right? We talk about, you know, middle school being this ugly space, but the reality is we come out of that really tough, ugly developmental space, right? As I'm going to use the word small humans, and I don't mean it in stature, but I mean it in, we have such an underdeveloped sense of experience because mm-hmm. we don't have the time behind us, right? And so to be able to grab a hold of something that I can use as my guide and my crutch,
yeah,
almost, as I walk through my own ability to develop resilience, to become optimistic, to, if I have trauma, we know so many kiddos experience trauma of a variety of different, mm-hmm. extreme to minor, but it doesn't make it any less real for the individual.
Not at
all. And that's the other thing that I think is really critically important here about your work. So what would you say to teachers, to parents, to community members who are physically grabbing a hold of aggressive optimism, that book, and tucking it into their bag and carrying it with them, about the idea of sort of scaffolding our way through our own development?
Oh, I love this question.
You're so awesome. Okay, so first of all, thank you for tucking it under your arm and using it. I literally wrote it for that. I wrote it so that, look, when I was experiencing PTSD, it was a very uncommon diagnosis for people outside the military. And so for me, it was like nobody understood what I was going through. Even when I was in the hospital, like the nurses, most of them had no idea what the symptoms of PTSD were, how to handle it, all of that. So I felt so alone and isolated, and that my experience wasn't valid. Like, it was such an identity crisis along with this like really real physical trauma that I was going through. And so when I set out to write the book, I set out for two reasons. Three reasons. One, to give people character tropes that they could relate to. So like the main character is very ambitious and like that kind of type A student. Her two best friends are pretty much the opposite of her, but they all have value. And then there's a bully character, right? Who turns out is being bullied herself. So it's this whole hurt people, hurt other people type of thing. But for the students, there are four characters that I really think they'll be able to relate to and follow through on this journey of just healing and discovering who you are and how you operate in the world and what you want to do with this life, right? But then there's also the parent characters and the teacher characters. And I wanted to have those developed because they're experiencing NIF in crisis, and the way that they're interacting with her, I think, is going to be a very beneficial example to how teachers and parents can interact with someone going through trauma. So those were the two things, like getting it so that the people outside of NIF could understand what trauma looks like for the person experiencing it, then having NIF as the lead character. There's a lot of internal dialogue in the book because I wanted people to understand, the readers to understand, like, if you are experiencing trauma, here are words that you can use to describe that trauma. And for the people who aren't experiencing trauma, to understand what those words mean. Like, there's one scene in the book that I think is so important, and it's
Niff is having a really bad day. This is after she goes through quite a bit and gets a bunch of tools in her toolbox. She's having a really bad day. She says to her parents, I'm going to talk to my friends. And they have already, and I describe it more beautifully and eloquently, you guys, don't worry. but the point of it is the parents and Niff have already communicated that it doesn't mean she doesn't love them, respect them, need them when she says, I would rather talk to my friends about this. And so there's no like hurt feelings or pinged like egos involved in that healing process. And I feel like that scene is so important because that piece of the puzzle is so important, right? Like when you're healing from trauma, removing emotion from the equation is going to allow for that healing to begin. And so that's the second reason it was really important to me. And the third reason is tools, like being able to give tools in the form of actual tips and tricks in the book, but then also characters that the reader can hold on to. So there you have it.
Yeah. No, and I think that that's really quite fabulous because I think it's really effectively sets the stage for the variety of ways in which you could sort of tap into this story, mm-hmm. right? Because honestly, you could utilize this in a variety of different ways, right? You could use it as pure literature, right? Mm-hmm. And you could study the value of character development and all of these sorts of things and journey in that sense. You could tap into the fact that it's literature that is, you know, so chock full of tools and opportunity to learn from it, right? You know, and so folks will go a variety of different ways with this. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And in fact, I think that's the mark of a great piece of literature means that we are able to, right, utilize it in so many different ways and scenarios as a mechanism to teach, learn, and grow, right? So that's super awesome.
Thank you.
But I absolutely, you know, one of the things that I do want to make sure that we spend just a few minutes, because I don't want to lose it, before we have to wrap up, is talking about the idea of optimism versus toxic positivity, right? That was one of the things that you and your team sent over. And I think it's really important because people will get lost in not understanding that we are not talking about one and the same. And in fact, they are different.
Yes.
And they're so different, we have to really acknowledge kind of what's happening. So can you share just a little bit of that?
Yes, I appreciate that very much. Toxic positivity, in my viewpoint, is, in a word, denial. Mm. It's like an aggressive optimism, on the other hand, or optimism in general, is actually the opposite. It's acknowledging and still believing in the good, right? And so for me, like, especially on social media, right, there's this like wave of like, just smile. It's like, what? I mean, I get it, right? There's a time and a place for all of that. And I love myself a good meme. Like I definitely appreciate affirmations, but if you are going through trauma like I did, you literally can't understand the words, like physically in your brain. And so you feel guilty on top of all the other things that are going on in your life. You feel guilty because you can't smile. Like, I was crying for no reason. Y'all, I was not a crier. I don't even remember the time, like the last time I had cried before this incident happened to me. And I was crying all day, every day, just for no reason, until somebody explained to me, they're like, it's the chemicals. Like, we have the fight, flight, or freeze. And if you decide to freeze, those chemicals sit in your body and mess with your brain chemistry. And so, of course, your body's trying to get them out, right? And so with toxic positivity, it's not acknowledging that some days just suck. Like, I'm sorry, flat out, sometimes the situation you are in is not smile throughable, right? It's okay, I am in this situation and I do not want to be, and there are a million ways for me to get out. What's the best possible way for me to handle this, right? And so, I mean, we talk about it all the time. I'm sure that everybody listening has these conversations on the regular of like, how do you handle abuse at home? There's a million ways to do it, right? What's the best way for that individual in their specific unique circumstance? The belief that they can is the optimistic part. The aggressive part is committing to acknowledging and doing the work to move forward. Toxic positivity, on the other hand, is kind of like blowing off the reality of it, the situation, you know? So in a nutshell, even though that wasn't really a nutshell, there you go.
No. That's absolutely perfect, because I've watched that happen so many times, right? You know, a kid will show up at a program at a school and, you know, they are having a bad day, and we make a lot of assumptions. And granted, you know, educators or, you know, folks in, you know, after school or community programs, they're busy, right? Totally get it, right? But it's really hard sometimes to have the freedom, if you will, right, to really dig in and understand. And I think sometimes that we don't necessarily cause more trauma, but we can by not understanding. Very much so, we can, right? You know, and all circumstances are different, and we just really need to find ways to collectively be able to honor and understand that one size doesn't fit all, right? And just to be better humans in the mix. I always like to close the conversation, Jenna, by recognizing that we have listeners from all over the world, and, you know, and they're all going to grab something different from the conversation, which is beautiful. But they're often wondering, okay, what do I do next? Right. So first we're going to say, go buy the book, read the book, right? Yes. We'll tell them all to do that. But then what do I do? And so, Jenna, what is your recommendation, especially for an educator or somebody who runs a program for teens? If you had to choose one thing to do next with what you've just experienced and learned by reading the book, what would you suggest to these people?
If you want to bring it into your program classroom life and you are experiencing any kind of roadblock, please reach out. I am more than happy to brainstorm our own aggressive, optimistic solution to your situation, and share it. I mean, use it as a tool. You know, I really did write it as a tool to encourage people to figure it out, right? Like you'll find a way. You really, really will. So please reach out to me. My email address is hello@jennaedwards.com. I would be more than happy to talk to you about how to get it into your school, club, organization, whatever you're trying to do. And let's change some lives, and not just students' lives, but like what you just said about educators, you all are busy. And I feel like this book gives the students an opportunity to learn tools to figure things out on their own, so that they're not looking to other people to validate and help, so much so that they can't do it on their own.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well said. Well, Jenna, thank you very much
you.
For your book, for Aggressive Optimism, and for being willing to be vulnerable to share your own story and journey with others in a way that is going to, you know, potentially change someone's life for the better. And so that's super exciting. So, but thank you for taking time to talk with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin, and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.